Welcome to the Jacob's Well podcast. These messages are intended to feed you some great stuff that you can really dig your teeth into all week and beyond. That's why you can find it anytime, along with other great resources and ways to keep the conversation going at jacobs-well.net/leftovers. Enjoy the message.
Okay, Jacob's Well. Glad to have you all here. It's a great day. You may be wondering, I'm Greg Meyer, by the way, but you may be wondering why this 40-year-old Rupert Olson song, the Pina Colada song, is playing right now, and you'd be, it's a reasonable question. My guess is that probably most of you recognize it, but maybe you haven't listened to the song or the words that clearly to know the story. And yes, it's shallow, but it's poignant. And it has a lot to do with really what we're talking about these weeks. So listen as you get to the turning point here. I knew the curve of her face. It was my own lovely lady. And she said, oh, it's you. Then we laughed for a moment. And I said, I never knew that you like pina colada. Okay, so like, how can you not like this song, right? So if you don't know, so it's this couple whose love has just kind of grown old, and they're just lost interest in each other, lost interest in the relationship. So one night while she's sleeping, he's going through the personal ads and finds this ad for someone who's looking for all this excitement in his life, in her life, and so he answers that one because it sounds exactly what he's looking for. And so deceptively, then he goes off to his rendezvous and guess who shows up? Right, his old partner. He thought he was the one who was checking things out, and she was way ahead of him. And what's going on there? I mean, so both of them had these hopes, dreams, and desires that they'd never shared with each other. All they'd done was live with the expectations that they'd felt from each other and the weight, the burden of that. And they not only got tired of the relationship, they stopped being curious and being interested in one another. Yeah, like I said, I'm not lifting this up as a technique to get some energy back in your tired relationship. But it's not a bad example of like how we do get stuck and what can get unstuck, you know? And see, what happens though is we have these situations, and this is what we talked about last week, is that we have these hopes, dreams, and desires that we come into. We bring them into our relationships. We do it not only, you know, as couples, but we do it at work, we do it with our friends, we do it with our neighbors, we do it with our in our families. And so we come and, you know, we have these hopes, dreams, and desires that we bring to each other. And, you know, we want the other person's relation to fulfill them for us. But the thing is, you know, when they receive these hopes, dreams, and desires, they feel like that, right? Like expectations. My hopes and dreams and desires turn into your expectations. How excited are you to fulfill my expectations, right? I mean, you were created, right, to fulfill my expectations? I don't think any of us really feel that way because, you know, expectations don't feel like hopes, dreams, and desires to the other person at all, do they? I mean, expectations feel burdensome. They feel like responsibility. They feel like demands. They're tiring. I mean, it's hard to get too excited about that. And the thing is, remember that the other person is doing this to you, too, right? I mean, this is a reciprocal thing, right? So what you really have are two sets of my hopes, dreams, and desires. You got this set and this set, and we hand them off to each other, and they both turn into expectations when we do that. And yeah, it's not the greatest situation in the world. It's where we get stuck. So we try to work it out by a couple ways, and talked about that last week too. We do it by just like leaving. That's what the song did, right? They both just exited and looked for greener pastures someplace else, you know, start over. That's one way, yeah, escaping. I guess you can do that. Or we can just try to win. We can make our hopes, dreams, and desires prevail over the other person's. And that's really great because now we can have two people fulfilling my hopes, dreams, and desires. It's great for me, not so great for you. It's rotten for the relationship. It's not going to work. It's a short-term answer. Ends in disaster always. Or we can settle for compromise, right? Neither of us getting quite what we want, but least enough that keeps us interested. It keeps us at the table, and we don't give up and walk away. You know, we don't take our marbles, or in this case, our hope, dreams, and desires, and go home. None of those are solutions. Those are all stuck ways of dealing with it, wishing the problem would go away, and probably either making the whole thing fall apart, or we just take a problem and we go to a new situation and create it all over again. You know, so in all those cases, the relationship loses. It never gets the 1 + 1 = 2. It always falls short of that. In fact, you know, it doesn't even then begin to get even close to what I think relationships really promise us, and that is 1 + 1 = more than 2. 1 + 1 is, you know, our relationship should be able to have a sum that is greater than its parts, right? Something that is really huge and wonderful for us. So you'll find this on your outline. You need a third way then to deal with this. That's the deal here. You need a third way to deal with your relationship when it's stuck this way, and that is when your hopes, dreams, and desires have turned into expectations for someone else. That's what we talked about last week. If you want to hear the long version of that, the full story, you can go back and listen to that podcast. But we need a way to do that, and not just another way to tackle the problem. It's just not, you know, well, there's leaving, and there's compromising, and there's winning. There must be something else you can do in there. Well, you know, there isn't just another position like that, another solution. We need a third way. And I said last week that we would talk about what that third way is this week, and I didn't let you know what it was, but I told you maybe already know it. And the truth is, I don't really have an answer. You knew that coming. But I mean, we're really not about answers here, right? I mean, an answer would just be another position. It would just be another option among those. I mean, it really is something different. It's bigger than just an answer. It's really a direction. It's somewhere we can point. And like I said, I really do think all of us sort of know it inside. It's kind of hidden there. We resist it. I know I resist this. But I know it's true. And it needs to be said out loud, and we need to understand it and kind of get a sense of how it works. And we, I think, have to kind of embrace it as a community, knowing I'm not the only one that has trouble, one, agreeing to this, and two, making it happen in my life and in my relationships. So I'll tell you right now, in case you have to leave in a couple of minutes, you'll get the whole thing. I'm going to tell you right now what I understand this third way to our relationships being. And that is, it's this. It's seeking to be fully present for the other. Seeking to be fully present for the other and expecting nothing in return. Expecting nothing in return. To be fully present, to give your all, to everything you can to your partner, and expect nothing in return. Why would anyone think that is a good idea? I mean, it's just full of problems, full of, pitfalls, you can imagine. It sounds like such an ideological perspective. I mean, it sounds really good, but face it, Greg, that is not practical. I mean, you can't really do that. You're going to get walked all over. Yeah, I suppose. But let me try to show why, as difficult as it is, and as hard as it is, and as much as we might resist it, why it really might be the only option we've got. And it's because it sort of starts with this thing that there's a problem with expectations, right? We've talked about that already, sort of that emotional weight, but let's look at them a little more carefully. First of all, when hopes, dreams, and desires turn into expectations, what happens to relationships? Then relationships become transactions, don't they? If my relationship with you is based on expectations and yours is based on I have expectations of you, you have expectations on me, my job is to fulfill your expectations, your job is to fulfill my expectations, this sounds like you just were checking out of a grocery store, right? I mean, you have a transaction going on where you're both doing, paying the debt that you have towards each other. We aren't fulfilling each other's hopes, dreams, and desires at all. So we're just trying to live up to each other's expectations. That's a transaction. And when relationships become transactions, we seek to make them fair. Relationships are supposed to be fair, right? It seems like they should be, but maybe that's a great example of asking the wrong question and expecting to find a helpful answer. Maybe it's just the wrong question. Yeah, we want them to be fair, though. And no one wants to put in more than the other person. It should be, it can be negotiated and measured. It doesn't have to, you know, take long. But it, you know, it doesn't have to take long. Not with your roommate, not with your partner, not at work, not with your friends. It doesn't take long to have such a long list of things that we expect from each other to do that there is no room for you to do anything that would register anything more than you just met another expectation that I have for you. And that's all we have. And that, what does that feel like? What does it feel like to be living in that kind of constant expectation? First of all, go back to, it feels like pressure, right? All this, you know, won't you, can't you, wouldn't it be great, I want, I know, please. We used to always, I'd love it, if only, all these hopes, dreams, and desires coming from you that just come on me, and I go, oh my goodness, I just don't think I can stand that anymore. Okay, so pressure is one. Another thing, it just, it feels like resentment. You know, I'm just tired of it, you know? I don't want to deal with this anymore. Or another thing that I think we all do is deception then, right? I just not enjoying playing this game. I don't see anything out of it. So I just kind of let you think I'm doing what you need, and I've got my own game going on the side. I develop my false self that you can see so that you'll think that's who I am and I'm doing these things for those reasons, but there's really a whole different dialogue going on in my head all the time, and that's who I really am, and I'm not letting you know that person. Okay? Or what about this one? Scorekeeping sound familiar to anybody? Anybody have a relationship where there's any scorekeeping going on? Come on, yeah, a few hands went up and I didn't even ask for them. I mean, this is as long as the day. Scorekeeping, I did this, did you do that? We just keep that going all the time. And anytime, you know, the score isn't level, well, then the other person owes something. I mean, where's the room for love in there? Where's the room for real hopes, dreams, and desires in that? Here's the real problem with expectations, and you probably can see it boiling out from those things. When all we can do is what is expected of us, there is no place for gratitude. Is there? You don't get credit for meeting expectations. So, you know, what are you going to be grateful for? Now, I don't know about you. Well, my guess is this is true for all of us. Probably the biggest check you write or the biggest automatic withdrawal that goes out of your bank every month is for your mortgage or your rent, right? Okay. And how many of you, like me, get this just wonderful, heartfelt, handwritten note from your mortgage company every month saying, thank you, thank you, thank you for this generous check you sent us this month. We realize how hard it is for you to earn the money to do that and to take the time to write us this check and to send it in or to set it up with your bank. We just want to thank you for paying your mortgage again this month. You all get those? No, what? You don't? Oh, gee. I don't either. Why not? Because you're not doing them any favor. You're just paying the debt that you have to them. You don't get thanked. There is no gratitude for doing what you are expected to do, for what you're owed. When our relationships turn into transactions, there isn't love. There isn't the ability to do anything other than what is expected for each other. And where's the gratitude going to happen in that? You're supposed to clean the house, you know? We divide the chores a long time ago. I thought we said that you were going to be doing that. It's your turn to make dinner, to buy the groceries, or to do the laundry. Of course you put in the extra hours in the job to get that project done and to do it well. That's what we do here. That's what you do here. You know, Mother's Day, birthdays, anniversaries, Christmas, Valentine's, you gave me a gift? Well, of course you did. That's what people do on those holidays, right? You want credit for that? No, you know, that was the expectation. So when hopes, dreams, and desires turn into expectations, you don't get credit for doing something. You know what you do get? You get in trouble if you don't do it, right? I mean, what a great basis for a relationship. You do what you know you're supposed to do, and it just goes unnoticed, and if you ever miss, ding, you lose something. Now, my hope is that that doesn't explain everything in all of your relationships. But I'd be willing to bet it explains a lot, or it articulates a lot of what's going on in all of our relationships. Because we all play this game way too much. And it's all because of those expectations that we bring to each other and the fact that we're going to hold on to them and we don't dare let go of them. We don't dare say that we expect nothing in return. So, what would happen if I did let go of my expectations? What would happen if I let go of them? If I let go of them, then I could see that whatever you do for me is actually an expression of your love for me. If I didn't expect you to do it, then I would realize that you're actually trying to show that you care about me, that you are concerned about me. You weren't just making a payment towards an obligation, but you were giving me a gift. But if I let go of my expectations, then the next question is, does that mean that I have to let go of my hopes, dreams, and desires too? And the answer is, yeah, it does mean that. It does mean letting go of your hopes, dreams, and desires. But, and this is an important but here, okay? It doesn't mean abandoning them. It doesn't mean forgetting them. It doesn't mean they aren't important. We said last week that those come from some very core places in us often. They often reflect a lot about who we truly are and what we are trying to be about. So it's not like we just want them to never be a part of the game, but it means letting go of them. It means recognizing them for what they really are. They are your hopes, dreams, and desires. They are not the ultimate hopes, dreams, and desires. And as being only your hopes, dreams, and desires, the things that just welled up inside of you as an individual, they probably aren't truly worthy of who you are. And so we let go of them. I want you to do an exercise with me, okay? It's kind of an exercise, right? So you sit in your chair, and I want you to take your arms and wrap them around yourself kind of tightly. I want you to furrow your brow a little bit, right? So like you're looking, feeling a little stern. Got your mouth kind of clenched shut, and you can breathe only through your nose, kind of vigorously. I hope you don't actually do this when you're in your relationships, but how often do you actually feel this way? All right, let go of that. Now, shake that tenseness out, all right? Put your hands just gently out in front of you, palms up. Relax. Take a deep breath. Breathe through your nose and exhale through your mouth. Just do a few of those and feel your shoulders loosen up. Let your palms be open and free. Now, in both those ways, you're holding your hopes, dreams, and desires. One is your clenching them. You're refusing to let them go. The other is you're saying, no, I offer these, and I know something is going to happen to them, something needs to happen to them, but I'm wanting them to be a part of something bigger. I'm giving them up to what? To us? Not just to me anymore? The third way involves letting go of your hopes, dreams, and desires. Let me bring you back. So last week, if you weren't here, we talked about the story from Mark chapter 2, and like everything else, I started it, and I didn't finish it on purpose, okay? So Jesus is teaching. He's very popular, and he's in this house, and the house is absolutely jammed with people that are wanting to hear him, you know, talk and speak and do his Jesus thing. And there's a paralyzed man in the village, and his hopes, dreams, and desires that Jesus could heal him, right? So his friends try to bring him to Jesus, but they can't get in because there's such a crowd. So what they do is they go up on the roof and they tear off some of the thatching and they drop him down in front of Jesus. And Jesus is so impressed by the trust that this man has in his ability to fulfill his hopes, dreams, and desires that he turns to the man and says, "Your sins are forgiven." Like, what? I mean, thanks, Jesus, that's nice, but that's not what I came here. My hopes, dreams, and desires is that you'd heal me, that I would no longer be paralyzed. Now, there's some more going on here. I mean, I think Jesus is trying to educate us a little bit about what hopes, dreams, and desires really are and how they work and where they come from. But it's also trying to tell us about the availability of actually meeting what we're looking for. Because the rest of the story really doesn't seem to even focus on the fact that Jesus didn't heal him. It all gets in on the fact that he said, your sins are forgiven, because there's a bunch of religious rulers there, and they are not at all amused that Jesus just forgave some sins, because you don't do that. Certainly, no, you know, that's, as they say, they were troubled in their hearts, the verse says. It's interesting. It doesn't say they're just troubled or they're troubled in their minds. No, they're troubled in their hearts. What the Bible is trying to tell us there is that these guys really had it inside. They were really messed up. They were really mixed up. They really thought that there's a gatekeeper to God's love for people. And if you did it the wrong way, you couldn't have it. They really felt it. That's how they worked in their world. And Jesus is wanting them to know that, no, it isn't like that. This is here for everybody. God's love, what Jesus was telling this man before he heals him is that you are loved. You need to know that the way I see you, the way that God sees you, the real truth about you is that you are whole. No matter what your circumstances are, no matter what the conditions are in your life, you are you, and that is a great thing and a wonderful thing. And until you embrace that, even if you can walk, you're not going to be happy. But then he says to everybody, so if you think, you know, I'm not supposed to be able to forgive sins, well, which is it? Which is easier, forgive sins or to heal somebody? So I'll just tell you, pick up your mat, stand up, and give lots of thanks to me because I just did a really, really good thing for you. No, he doesn't say. He says, stand up, pick up your mat, and go home. Because Jesus didn't expect anything in return. He just wanted to give. You know, he knew there's no gatekeeper. He knows that these gifts, the most important things of life, the things that need to come first so that the things that come second, usually a lot of those hopes, dreams, and desires that our false selves have accrued around ourselves, or at least the way our false selves understands them, will only make sense when the true self is able to take over, the self that God has put in there, when we are really woven with our true selves and with others and with God in ways that are strong and resilient and enduring. Only then will we be able to realize those things and appreciate them and let them make a difference in our life. And so Jesus does that to them. And I kind of think what he's telling us are those two lessons. One is we don't really understand our hope, dreams, and desires. We don't really understand what they are. We think that there are certain things that need to come first, and we're usually wrong. Because we're doing it by ourselves. It's not that we're so stupid. It's not that we're bad. It's just that we are incomplete, and we were not made to be by ourselves. We were not made to be islands. We were not made to be independent. We are made to be part of that woven rope of three strands. And to have that be our context of understanding what those hopes, dreams, and desires look like in the first place. We don't really understand those. The other thing he's trying to tell us is that there are no gatekeepers. There are no great keepers to the grace of God. There are no gatekeepers to what's really important in our lives and what matters most. But it's hard not being the gatekeeper, isn't it? You know? It's hard to, like, just say, well, I'm going to let anybody have access to my life then, right? I'm just going to do the right thing, and I'm not going to expect anything in return. No, I kind of want to have some gatekeeping going on there because I don't like being that vulnerable. Now, I have to throw a disclaimer in here, first of all. If we're talking about a situation in which your safety is compromised because of verbal, emotional, physical abuse, or even just your well-being, all right, that really does need a little different and a further conversation. So if you feel like you're in that situation and wondering if you should apply this in those kinds of safety and well-being situations, you really do need to get some professional help to walk you through that part of it, okay? And if you don't know who to do that with or how to do it, come and see me. I'm not the person that can sort it out for you, but I can get you connected, okay? So that needs to be out there. But I think for the vast majority of us and the vast majority of the situations we're in, we need to, you know, figure out what it means to not be the gatekeeper and to not always try to have that happen. You know, because I would imagine every one of us would love to love freely, counting no costs, holding nothing back. We would love to give our best, expecting nothing in return. But you know what would happen if we did that? You know what would happen if you did? If I loved that way, then all I would get back was his crap, not his love. If I did that, if I put down my guard, I'd be taken advantage of. If I loved that unconditionally, I'd be giving up the only leverage I have in this relationship. If I didn't keep insisting that she did her part, then nothing would ever happen. If I gave the impression that I was all in like that, I'm afraid he would be out. If I do that, if I give assurances of anything, if I give up all my assurances that something will be given back, then I'm afraid that, you fill it in. But that was the word that you just heard there, wasn't it? If I, then I'm afraid, fear. It's fear, isn't it, that's driving us? Fear of our inability to be able to continue to control the situation, to protect ourselves, to make sure that we're not taken advantage of. Fear, that's what's behind all this. You're afraid, and I'm afraid. And if I don't keep the expectations out there, I'm afraid of what will happen. But folks, fear doesn't bring life to any relationships. Fear is incapable of bringing life to relationship. That's where the third way has to happen. Third way has to happen right in the face of your fear, right in the face of my fear. You see, this is what third way is asking us to do with our hopes, dreams, and desires, all right? These positions here. It's asking us to look for something more than just another place, all right? I'm standing, this is nice and secure, standing on my hopes, dreams, and desires. I know this is how it's going to work. I know what the outcomes are going to be. I know what I expect of you. And I don't have to budge on any of this. This is good. But it's asking us to do something better than this. It's asking us to not just find another position. It's not just your position. It's not just a compromise, which is halfway between mine and yours. It's asking us to look for something that understands our relationship completely differently. It's asking us to do something new. It's telling us a couple of things. It's telling us, first of all, that there's far too much me in my hopes, dreams, and desires, and not nearly enough us in them, all right? It's telling us there's too much me and not enough us. It's also inviting me to walk out in this spot and to let go of my hopes, dreams, and desires. Because it's only here where you will see who I actually am. You will never really know the me as long as I'm over there. And it's only here that I will ever find out the you that you really are. It's asking me to let go of those hopes, dreams, and desires. It's also asking me to do a couple of other important things. It's asking us to come to this place in the middle here where the hopes, dreams, and desires that we craft are not mine, they're not yours, they're not halfway between yours and mine, even though that's kind of figuratively what it looks like, but it's in this other place and they are ours. These are our hopes, dreams, and desires. And it's asking us to believe that the hopes, dreams, and desires that are crafted here are bigger, they're better than anything we could have ever had on our own. This is a place where it really happens. And these kinds of hopes, dreams, and desires that happen here, that are born here, that are discovered here, take more than just me to realize them. It's going to take all of us. And that's the confidence to know that, you know, no hope, dream, and desire that you come up with yourself or that you could accomplish for yourself is actually worthy of you. But it's always going to be something else. So Jesus is wanting to give us some perspective on all this as well, okay? He says, you know, I know that we're going to need to let go of some of this. It might not feel fair. It might feel like you're a fool, or it might be embarrassing. You feel like you're losing your leverage. You're going to be taken advantage of. But Jesus is that third way thinker, right? Jesus is trying to get us to picture all this in a little bit different way and attend to it in a different way. So in his last day, his very last day with his disciples, okay? And he tells them that he's got a new commandment for them, right? He boils his whole message down to just one sentence, right? He says, I know you've got all the commandments, right? The Old Testament, the book of Leviticus, the Torah has 640 some laws that everybody's to follow. And Jesus earlier had boiled those 644 down to two. love the Lord your God with all your heart and all your soul and all your strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. He says, okay, now I'm going to just turn that into one. It's just going to be one commandment. And it's this: love one another. I said, well, that's not really new. He says, well, yeah, but there's more to it. Love one another as I have loved you. Well, how did Jesus love us? Expecting nothing in return. Giving everything he had so that he could do it. And then he goes on and he says, and this is what I gave you half of again last week as we were leaving. He says, there is no love that is greater than this. Greater than what? Then you would lay down one's life for one's friends. There's no greater love than to lay down one's life for one's friends. Now that sounds pretty dramatic. Jesus did it the very next day, laid down his life for his friends. But that word friends is really, it's philos, those that one cares about, those that one is concerned with, those who are friends, those whom we love. But we do it in kind of everyday ways as well, right? It's not always just this drastic, I'm going to die for you. In fact, the words there in that verse, lay down one's life, can as easily be translated as set aside oneself. The word life there isn't the typical word for life, like you live or you die. It's the life that is like within you. It is the same word that is often translated as self. One would lay down oneself, or let me say it this way, no one has greater love than to set aside oneself, or if you take the language that we've been using all morning, there is no greater love than to set aside one's hopes, dreams, and desires, and to expect nothing in return. What Jesus is saying is he isn't waiting for us to move. He loves, expect nothing in return, because that is how love, not transactions, that is how love works. So the question is, who will go first? All right? Who will go first to the middle? There's a couple ways you can work it out. Say, well, you'll go first. When I see clear indication that you're willing to change, then I'm willing to do what I know I'm supposed to do. Well, maybe when there's a clear indication that you're ready to move, or you've made enough promises that I believe that you will move. Or how about this? We're going to count to 1, 2, 3, and then we'll both go. I think all of us have tried that way too long. Doesn't happen, does it? Who's going to move first? That's the title. It's like, who will go first? The answer? I don't know. You know, what is your answer? You got different kinds of relationships in different places, and you have this challenge in almost every one of them. It has different levels of intimacy, different levels of, you know, how personal and vulnerable it might happen to be, depending on the nature of that relationship. But especially these relationships that are close to us, this is a place that's really hard to answer that question. Who? Because it's your question. The other person's going to answer for them. You've got to answer for you. Who will go first? And the answer, third way, asks us to wrestle with, to find ways to overcome our faults, our insecure, our small-thinking, scarcity-ridden selves, is, I will. I will. I'll go first. I'll go first, even if you don't. I'll go first, even if I don't get credit for doing it. I'll go first, even if I lose my leverage, I lose my control, I lose my assurances that eventually you will, I'll go first. And this letting go, this going first, is not passive, folks. This is not being a doormat. This is the empowered self saying, I am going to be the person that I can be, and I am going to do that because I know that is where my power comes from. I know that's what it means to be a full and a whole person. This is a step that is bigger than our fears. It's counterintuitive, but we know it's true. There's a couple of things that are, you'll find this on your outline too, about why we go first, right? One of the reasons you go first is, I do it because it's the right thing to do for the right reason. I do the right thing for the right reason. I hope you have that core conviction inside you. It's really a hard one to hold on to. There's a short word that represents what that doing the right thing for the right reason is. It's called integrity, all right? Integrity comes from this recognition that there is a true self inside of me, this self that God has woven into the fabric of this universe and into the people around me, and that's who I really am, and that's who I want to be, all right? Being the person I know myself to do, or I know myself to be. I also go first because my true self is already there. My true self is already there. This is my false self standing over here. The one that uses this position to protect who I am, to project project images and expectations out to the rest of the world, right? But my true self is already there waiting for me to catch up. So why do I go first? So that I can be the person that I really want to be. And I want to be this person, and I want to be known for this person. I can maybe coerce you off of your spot from here, but this is the place I can invite you from. This is the place that will actually be attractive for you to come and to meet me with, all right? I also go first because I trust that there is something new and bigger there. This is, you know, I can't be part of what will be as long as I stay a part of what was. I can't be a part of what will be as long as I stay a part of what was. And this is hard. Fear is easy. Trust is hard. The opposite of fear, you know, is not courage. The opposite of fear that we've been talking about, the thing that keeps us from having these authentic relationships where we expect nothing in return, is trust. And where do we find that trust with and of each other? And how do we let go of what we have unless we can trust that there is something better for us out there? No guarantees. I don't know it for sure. I can't exactly describe what it's going to be like because it's new. It's something. It's a third thing. I have to be there to discover it. But how can I do that? And the truth is that, as I was saying before, that you are not an island. No person is an island. If we create our own dreams to try to make them come true, they're never really worthy of us. And out here, we discover that something that is new, these hopes, dreams, and desires that are bigger than the ones we have. Last reason that we venture off and go first to this third place is that there's only one thing that I can control in the world. There's only one thing I can control, and it's myself, okay? Stepping out here is where this begins, and I start focusing on what only I can do, and that is controlling myself and being the person that I want to be, all right? When I stay here, I'm here so that I can control you. We know about how well that works. I come out here so that I can say, no, here I will control myself, and I will be doing the thing that I can do. We talk a lot about, Stephen Covey, I think, first articulated this, but we talk about our circle of concern. You find a couple of circles on your outline there. The big circle, the larger one, is your circle of concern. It's all the things in this world that catch your attention, that are important to you, that you'd love to do something about, that you think are really important, right? We're attracted to all these things. We want to have impact on all of those things. But those are just your concerns. Inside of that circle is a much smaller circle called your circle of influence. Those are the things that you can actually do something about. And there's only one thing that is intrinsically inside there, and it's you. Start with you. The more we focus on our circle of concern outside of ourselves, the more distracted, frustrated, the more and unattractive we are for cooperation from other people, the less influence we have on other people. In fact, the more we focus outside of a circle of influence, the smaller a circle of influence gets. When we stick inside with who we are, we decide the only thing that I can control is myself, and we begin to exercise that, and then we find our influence grows. So that's a basic thing about that as well. So the invitation today is to accept this idea that the third way really is about being as authentically true to myself and to other people as I possibly can be, and expecting nothing in return, and learning how to live in that very difficult place. So I invite you, stand up and just join me for a minute. So stand up, relax, shake off some of that tenseness. Just be present. Take a breath. You can imagine maybe, imagine yourself standing on this board here. As I spring up and down, it bounces, and maybe you can spring on your own feet a little bit and feel the lightness of that, this new possibility that can breathe new life into what maybe has grown so old and so stale and so stuck. I know it seems easy here to do that. Out there, it's hard. Fear is easy. Love is hard. But that's what we're called to be. Called to join in this place, to not be afraid of it, to walk with each other in it, to recognize the three-strandedness that is required of us to be there. You need to know that there are not expectations that you are able to do this. All right? You are not being evaluated or graded. You aren't a good person or a bad person because it's hard for you to live expecting nothing in return. You're simply invited to it. Invited to do something that is very hard and none of us ever quite accomplish. To let that free place where you could live with no gatekeepers earn some trust from you so you could start trying it in new places with new relationships and in new ways. Practice when it's easy, so it's not so hard when you really need the skills in those desperate times. And we can do this together. So take a breath. Maybe imagine one of those places where you will do this week. One of these people that you will let down those expectations and expect nothing in return and just give. Try it. See what happens. They won't all be pretty stories, but they will all be success stories because you will be doing what you know is right for you to do. So breathe and may it be so.
Thanks for listening. If you found this podcast valuable, please pass it along to others. And we'd love to hear from you, too. You can email us at info@jacobs-well.net or message Jacobs Well Minneapolis on Facebook. We see what we do as a community really making a difference for people. Since you're listening, you probably have, too. If you'd like to make a donation to support this work, you can find ways at jacobs-well.net/give. Thanks. Listen again next week or join us in person Sunday mornings at 10:30.